visits. Owen Hardy sending out Fair Maiden. A terrific effort in the La Brea. Really strong. And we'll talk to Owen Hardy. Looking forward to it. And not just familiar names as you look through the the end of the season and the beginning of the season. How about in New York? Capo Kane and that Jerome on Saturday. Dylan Davis for Harry Weiner. We're going to talk to Harry Weiner. And Weiner, a guy that came over from the UK as a rider. Michael Dickinson originally sourced him, and he stayed. And he's got a good one. He's been on his own for a while. Philly-based. And speaking of Philly-based, Keith Jones. Keith Jones is going to be with us in the second half this morning. And, it occurred to me as his career was winding down that he'd never been on. I can't let Keith Jones. Apparently, he's moving literally today. Literally, the movers are picking up his belongings. I guess he's moving to Texas. We'll hear about what he has got planned post career, racing announcing career. But there really was a nice outpouring of affection for Keith Jones, a distinctive voice, and nearly four decades in Philadelphia. And, that really, makes him really part of I talked about it when I tweeted a congratulations and I guess a fare thee well kind of a thing the other day, that when you fold in Philadelphia, Maryland, and Delaware, the tripod of mid-Atlantic racing. I suppose Monmouth, Monmouth's sort of mid-Atlantic adjacent. The three voices that, have been, just for the longest time, and for Curran and Jones, to depart within months of each other, leaving Dave Rodman as the, as the last of the longstanding, mid-Atlantic voices. It's amazing when you think about it, the longevity of the three of them. So we're going to talk to Keith about his career and exiting the stage. And of course, I'm sure everybody by now over the last, 36 hours has seen the video of the dog watching a race from Parks. It's the greatest. It's the greatest thing. And it's gotten, even Rex Chapman retweeted it out. I guess it came from Instagram. And one of the tags I considered was, "Where's Keith Jones? Where's Keith Jones? Where's Keith Jones?" actually, it's a girl, Bella is her name, jumping as the horses leave the gate. And apparently she watches racing whenever it comes on TV. I hope somebody's going to do a story and source that and get some more, because there was no shortage of this kind of social media niceties about racing, including Al Michaels last night during the Al Michaels referencing betting at getting some bets down at Santa Anita. If you didn't hear it, I was sort of half asleep. It's kind of a fitting end to a bad year for us, for the Eagle faithful. you know, but the good news is Dallas. Good news is that Dallas didn't get in. That was the upside of how things unfolded yesterday. Anyway, Keith Jones joining us and Harry Weiner to talk about his experience and his career. We also later on, I mentioned some passings, and one of the ones that really saddened on a widespread basis, Fred Amy, an institution when it comes to the jockey agent trade. One of those names and personalities, right? Because jock agents are always personalities. And, you know, Fred Amy's most associated with Pat Day, but that's very limiting. Yes, he had Fred, you know, Fred had Pat's book during, you know, the most productive period of Pat Day's career, including the Derby win. But he launched or furthered countless careers, did Fred Amy. And Brian Hernandez Jr. is one of them. And he's going to join us to pay tribute to Fred Amy. So looking forward to that. The names, it's just a who's who of riders. Quite a few that are, Cajun bound and Louisiana associated, Shane Sellers and Randy Romero and Eddie Delahousse, Donnie Mesh as well. And, you name it, Fred Amy had a turn with a lot of riders and really helped their careers. Miguel Mena, I think of as well. And, Ashley Broussard, and you may have seen a lovely comment from Aubrey Green, wrote something beautiful on Facebook about Fred Amy and his, his fellow agents as well. Nice things all around. So Brian Hernandez Jr., and I don't know if I've heard back, but Todd Fincher was going to join us based on an early invitation that I made because when they ran the Springboard Mile when we were leaving, that Senior Buscador that won the mile, that was a very nice performance, and it already, it's 2 weeks ago, but it feels like, it feels like 2 months. Want to hear more about the plans for Senior Buscador. So I got a feeling we're going to hear from Todd Fincher. So a busy morning, and we'll try to pace everything because there's so much news. I've also got, whether it's today or tomorrow, we're certainly going to have visits to pay tribute to David Kassin. And Kassin, who has been suffering from dementia the last couple of years and has been in bad shape. So it wasn't unexpected. 81, and, Kassin had a nice career as a rider before turning his attention to training. And then, just won consistently for 40 years from the 70s. I saw David Kassin's name. I probably the first day I ever, ever looked at PPs, David Kassin's name undoubtedly there. And we had some opportunities to over the last, decade plus to have David visit. Most recent big horse, Nikki Sandcastle. You may have seen Kate and Bradar comment about Jack Slade is the one she thought about, you know, immediately when hearing that David had passed. And Craig Burnick, because Casson trained for Glen Hill. And Craig put up the greatest picture of header card winning what? Maybe the La Brea. Was it the La Brea or the Santa Anita Oaks? Santa Anita Oaks, I think. It was pretty cool. Oh. And I, you know, I had that great picture from Pimlico, of that great black and white publicity shot of David Casson that, you know, even though it was, you know, decades old, it instantly recognizable, the square jaw and, Marcus Hirsch wrote a nice, very nice, whether it was the, I don't know if it was the full obit or some comments that he wrote on Twitter. But Marcus had some very nice things to say as well. The hearts go out to his wife, Jackie, and donations to TCA and the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund in lieu of flowers. And I'm, yeah, there's going to be a celebration in Louisville in the spring. So we'll certainly, I reached out to a couple of people that that knew him well, including Don Brumfield, who, you know, rode with him. And you know, Don was with us, right? Don was with us earlier last year, when we had when things were very quiet during the teeth of the pandemic, as racing was, you know, was limited. And speaking of TCA, perfect little quick segue. I'll mention that Wednesday, the TCA Stallion Auction begins, runs Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Starts 9 o'clock on Wednesday and wraps up 4:30 on Friday. This is always a great opportunity. Stallion seasons nationwide. And it's a, you know, the principal fundraiser for TCA. In fact, we had Aaron Crady on November, early December, and I referenced. So we'll probably get Aaron back in for a visit. We always do. She's always, because of the auction, she's always a first week of every year visitor. So TCA. A couple of other, while we're on this topic, and I know that we're, I also talked to Michael Blowen over the holiday, and Michael, we'll get Michael on. I owed him a visit, and Will's Way. There's also more riders that I've got to get to Kenny Bork passing, and I saw that J.J. Sunsieri. So I wasn't kidding. It was not a good couple of weeks when it came to passings. There were too many. I saw at Santa Anita, I'm sure one of our Santa Anita visitors will want to talk about Laz Samardzich as well, who passed. So racing was good. Some of the off the field action was a little downcast. A couple of pieces of news, because we're going to have Owen Hardy join us momentarily. And there's news this morning, and I had it in my notes from the other day in Ireland at Limerick. There was the Jonathan Shepherd horse, Baltimore Bucko, that was sent over, who ran very well. But news comes this morning that Jonathan Shepherd is retiring. And an incredible, incredible career comes to an end. So we'll certainly talk to Jonathan this week. And one of my favorite horsemen over the years. And that just hit the wire in the last hour. But it also, I had the Baltimore Bucko story. We can maybe get a little something about that from him as well. There was, of course, the HISA, the HISA legislation, and Matt Hegarty will join us later in the week. Matt's been on vacation himself, and he's gathering a few pieces of further information about the next steps. And it was, you know, it seemed like a fait accompli that it was going to pass anyway. It's a little troubling that it, after being promised to have debate, to have discussion in Congress, it ended up being tagged into the, you know, the omnibus bill. And it never received discussion. And, you know, there's some follow-up elements to this, including probably some conversation with HBPA's Eric Hamelbeck and TRA's Alan Foreman. I'd like to get all of their responses, and Matt will provide us with the news backdrop. There's also there's serious news, and then there's the news of the strange and unusual, which cropped up this weekend in New York, where antiquated, or I don't know how do you describe it, trite, ridiculous, the rules on the books I'm not sure what period of time exactly when it was instituted, but Dave Krennic brought to light the tidbit that recently married Katie Davis, Katie Bug, and Trevor McCarthy, who thought it might be nice to spend the winter in New York. and I'm sure it will be, but bizarrely, there are rules on the books that say married riders, if they compete in the same race, they can't, they have to go as an entry. And this was met with such just incredulous, logically incredulous response. It also gave rise to similar verbiage around the country, including in Maryland, where there's the issue between married trainers and riders. It cropped up, and was it Brittany Russell that came, and Joe Clancy had some of those details. So this is obviously something that has been, you know, lurking in the background, and this one got the most attention that I can remember. And of course, people asking immediately the fairly germane question, why is a husband and wife singled out versus siblings. I mean, the obvious sibling pairing that was being waved around was the Ortiz brothers. Why can brothers ride individual entry and married couples? And then, it's funny because Bob Berry, who a lot of you remember, Bob had a wonderful at-large column at Bloodhorse for a few years, a terrific writer. And Bob recalled Red Smith discussing this in a column or in a piece that going back, quite a few decades, and I got a kick out of it that Bob, Bob had recalled it. And in fact, I've got to pull it up because it was. Was it Robin Smith talking about getting a quote unquote friendly divorce because of this rule? Mary Bacon, excuse me, John and Mary Bacon, not Robin Smith. Well, Robin Smith was Fred Astaire, right? John and Mary Bacon got a friendly divorce because they weren't allowed to ride in the same race. And Bob referenced that from Red Smith. Very cool. And I got a big kick out of that. I said, Bob, for the Mary Jockey historical angle, win. pretty great. The problem with this is going to be, I'm sure they will extricate this from the rules, but they can't do it unilaterally. They're going to have to back it out. Through the legalities of the New York Racing Commission, the Gaming Commission, which is they'll propose eliminating the rule, and then there's a 45-day period, and then they can strike it. But frankly, by the time they get this done, you would think that McCarthy and Katie will be back in Maryland. But it's actually productive that this, it's ridiculous, of course, that the rule is inhibiting them. And, owners aren't going to want, and bettors, there's nobody that wants to deal with this. But I suppose it coming to light might help extricate similar rules from other jurisdictions. That's maybe the one, the one positive. So we'll see. I had to get that in fairly early because it was certainly a cause celeb over the weekend, when New York came back on, I'm losing track of days. That was Thursday, right? New Year's Eve, when the overnight came out and Dave Greinig, was trying to figure out what the story was, and he got to the bottom of it. While we're mentioning jockey storylines, a couple of nice milestone winners too over the last several days, and Daniel Centeno. 3,000th win. 3,000. We'll talk to Mig later, and he can opine on these kinds of milestones. And Carol Cedeno, who I think the world of, and, who's had to take time away from her career twice to have children, and has come back and regained momentum and career momentum, and has got riding titles, of course, at Delaware, and has done some wonderful things. I mean, she's very good, and she got her 1,000th win. So congratulations to Centeno and Cedeno. it hadn't occurred to me that there's a Will Shorts word game somewhere in here between Cedeno and Centeno. Change two letters and name two jockeys. That's the jock news. If Owen Hardy, Owen has got some horses on the track right now that he's working. So he said call anytime, except I guess it's 6:20. So we'll get to Harry Weiner first then. And we'll talk to Harry and then we'll get to Owen later in the morning. How about that? Let's do that, Case. Because I got plenty to touch on here. We're about 9:40 for Harry. All right. Get some overviews on the results. I mean, obviously, I featured Baffert's strong start to the season. Peter Miller, too. Miller with another twist of fate, winning at San Gabriel on Saturday. And, you looked at him and he had run okay. Getting back on the turf, you just really didn't know. I didn't really know what to expect in there. And this was a good performance, a really good performance. And another twist of fate now has got a potential to participate in the Pegasus turf or perhaps even on the Pegasus main track option. He's on both invitation lists. He's in the body of the invites for turf, and he's, I think, the first AE potentially on the dirt side. But another twist of fate on Saturday, and then there was the performance by Hembree that got an unbelievable ride by Joel Rosario and up the inside to win that Joe Hernandez on Friday. To start the graded stakes season at Santa Anita. So Peter Miller with a pair of wins. And one win that I reached out to Eric Kruljack because Kiss Today Goodbye and on opening day actually did okay with Kiss Today Goodbye. There was a hint that Kiss Today Goodbye was moving forward at the right time, and that performance in the San Antonio marks him as a nice one going forward. He's on the invite list to Pegasus. In fact, where is that? Yeah, here it is. Yeah, Charlatan, Code of Honor, Harper's First Ride, Jesus Team, Kiss Today Goodbye, Nick's Go, Mr. Freeze, Mucho Gusto, Sharp Samurai, Sleepy Eyes Todd, who also had a nice win over the holiday period, won that Mr. Prospector at Gulfstream. He's had a terrific, nice horse from Miguel Silva. Tax and True Timber. Those are your main invitees for Pegasus, which is what 2 weeks from Saturday. Yeah, 2 weeks from Saturday, 23rd. And then another twist of fate, Math Wizard, King Guillermo, and Baltus's Idol are the four reserve invites. Kiss Today Goodbye, quite nice. And that helped to kind of keep things afloat, frankly, on opening day at Santa Anita. So the other major performances, Smooth Like Straight, won the Mathis Brothers from Michael McCarthy with Rispoli, Umberto Rispoli. You had Duopoly that Chad Brown sent out. Win the American Oaks. And Chad, Chad finished a very nice flourish of, particularly with the ones he sent out west, between the Hollywood Turf Festival and so forth. Mucho Unusual, kind of a personal favorite. Tim Yachting, Johnny aboard out there when Johnny was out for the opening day activities at Santa Anita. Mucho Unusual took the Bobby Franco. Baltus with Nasty and the Lady of Shamrock. Right, that was the opening, most of the opening day. What else was there? That was pretty much, yeah. And then subsequently mentioned the San Gabriel and the Sham, the Joe Hernandez. Yesterday, the Santa Inez. So lots to, you know, got a few conversations that'll come out of that. Since I mentioned Sleepy Eyes Todd, quick glance at Gulfstream over the last couple of weekends. Sleepy Eyes Todd got 100 buyer too for Silva in that Mr. Prospector. And, you know, for those that aren't necessarily watching Gulfstream closely, how about another fiery start out of the blocks for Todd Pletcher? The winter season, just, it's amazing. Always shopping when the Via Borghese. How about the Tropical Park Derby, Colonel Liam. Mutasa Beck back on the dirt in the Mucho Macho Man Saturday. And Conlima on the front end with Paco as well. So four stake wins in, you know, 2 weeks and, 17 days, let's call it. Yeah. And that doesn't even include the other, you know, the non-stake performances. There were certainly a couple of interesting early three-year-old results, too, including that drained the clock. McLean's Music just, they start running. They break out running. And Drain the Clock wins the Limehouse for Safi Joseph. Jack Sisterson, that Kentucky Pharaoh, who came back on fairly, right? Come back. I got that. I've got that somewhere. He came back on fairly, that was a pretty quick turnaround, I think, for Kentucky Pharaoh. Yeah, the 19th. I was gonna say that he had just broken his maiden, and it was that close. It was on December 19th, and he comes back, in 2 weeks, and becomes a stake winner, just like that. This is a Calumet homebred, actually there was. American Pharoah, I should look up some results based on Stallion. It seemed like there was a lot of American Pharoah winners over the last few days, right? A bunch of different American Pharoahs at various levels, maiden winners and so forth. But yeah, Kentucky Pharoah gets the Jack Sisterson ended the year strong and starting it strong. So. There was also the three stakes. Was this Friday? I'll be honest, the days run together. But Imprimis just barely for Joe Orsino in the Janus, and Gulf Coast won that cash run. Rat Ortiz won all three of those. Won all three of those stakes. The Abundancia as well. Hear My Prayer. Imprimis got up over Extravagant Kid, Brendan Walsh, who's now an 8-year-old. Yeah, that was Friday, right? Yeah, it was Friday. Hear My Prayer, David Fisher, should mention. At a nice price, too. Paid $21. And this looks like a horse that this is a filly that missed a good portion of last year, but then started a started to come around for the fall, and had won the Melody of Colors back in March. So if she can, she's had some interruptions in her career, but it seems like, when she's right, she's nice. So plenty of Gulfstream action to discuss. Right now, we're going to get our first visit, Horseman of 2021, and it's Harry Weiner who sent out the Jerome winner on Saturday, and this was a nice performance by Capo Kane, and he just kind of ran away from the field. And Harry, congratulations. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, sir. Thank you.
Harry, I think a lot of people are going to enjoy hearing from you and hearing your backstory and what's ahead. Let's talk about you. Talk about coming to the U.S. and making a career for yourself, first as a rider and now as a trainer.
Okay. Well, I first started out in England. I was a groom and exercise rider with Arthur Stevenson when I left school, who was a steeplechase trainer, one of the leading trainers. And then I went to work for Michael Dickinson over there and did the same thing. And I rode a couple of races over jumps. And then Michael moved to America, and I moved with him to Fairhill. And it just went from there. And then I left Michael, and I went to Delaware Park, and I had this trainer over there, an Arabian trainer, that said if I got my weight down, I could ride this Arabian horse on the flats. And I weighed 140 at the time, so I got my weight down to 115, and then I rode on the flats for like 2 years. But I was never really a good jockey because I was always too weak. So then I left that, and then I went to work in New York for Mark Henning as an assistant trainer. And we had a lot of nice horses, went to the derbies, and we won a lot of big races with him. And then I worked for Jim Bond up there, 007. And then around 2004, I went out on my own, and I started a string of horses.
Tremendous. And I didn't realize that you worked for Bond and Mark Hennig. I knew you worked for John Scanlon. And knew about some days at Delaware, but you got a nice assortment, and the fact that it's always intriguing to me, Harry, about trainers that come from the riding side and have the opportunity to get on their own horses. I mean, you still get on your own in the morning?
Yes, I get on around 10 a day on my own. I try and get on all my horses maybe 2-3 times a week because I think it's a big advantage. For me to get on them, and I can feel if an exercise rider that of mine comes back and says, boss, this one felt a little funny today, I'll get on it the next day and try and feel the same thing he did, or sometimes I'll feel something different, and then we take it from there. So I think it's a big advantage that I get on my own horses.
Yeah, I agree. It's one of those things that, there's a nuance to it that, if there's just... If there's a hint of a problem, the ability to, to be that, have your hands and your legs on the horse, it just has to be an advantage to just watching. Not that just watching. There's plenty of horsemen out there that have won thousands of races without ever putting a leg over. But to me, it seems like something that. If I could do either, I would want to be somebody that gets on my horses.
Yeah, most definitely. It's a big advantage because I'm, to me, a horse on the ground, it's hard for me to see, but it's easier for me to feel than it is to see.
Well, in terms of client base, how did clients start to come your way?
Well, I started with my stepdad, Terry Hewitt, who I call my stepdad because when I come over here, my mother died, and then I worked for him for a longest time, and I rode for him too as a jockey, and I call him my stepdad, and he brought me along and taught me, what I needed to know, and then Hoover, who was a very nice client, and he started me with two horses, and I did very well for him. I had a horse called Billy One Night that I ran in a couple of states, ran second and third. And we made a lot of money, and I just started building it from there.
Outstanding. And, you know, this horse, let's talk about, you know, let's talk about Capo Kane. I mean, Winter Ride, I knew your name from the success you had with him. And this horse, who's a colt, this is a funny story. I mean, in terms of him, right? I mean, from him being an RNA and then being bought at an absolute bargain. And, you know, obviously he's got talent.
Oh, he's got a lot of talent. I mean, we got lucky when we bought this horse. I mean, the COVID was on, so there wasn't too many people at the sale. The sale wasn't very strong because of the COVID. And he was a big, good-looking horse. And when I saw him get RNA'd, I just said to Mr. Como and Mr. Liberto, I said, let's go and look at him. And if we like him, we'll try and negotiate a price. And they negotiated it at 26, and we ended up buying him.
It's unbelievable. And Paul Sharp had him, and he had RNA'd for $87,000 at OPS in March. And I did see that Liz Crowe talked about, you know, not a physical issue, but something that you know might put some people off. Talk about why you guys weren't weren't bothered by that.
Well, we had Paul Sharp said he had booked his shins down in the Ocala cell, so they had done some work to him, and it didn't bother me because his shins look good, and the horse just looked real good and magnificent to me, just big boned and a nice body to him. So I just said to, let's try and negotiate and take a shot. Sometimes you got to take a shot in this game, and you get lucky.
Well, and for that price, I mean, if you're taking a shot, why not? You know, 26.
Yeah.
To me, that's the best part of this, Harry. You know, there's a couple of nice parts. You know, there's you, you know, getting a horse that people are going to follow. And so it's great for you. And then it's great for people that have limited budget and, you know, go to a sale and have $30,000, $40,000 to spend on one or two horses, and you know to pop with a horse like this, it's very encouraging to people.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you don't have to. I mean, I've seen a lot of people spend millions and millions trying to get a Derby horse, and trying to get a good horse, and sometimes those $1 million horses don't even pan out. I mean, I've seen a $1 million horse run for $40,000 claiming.
So absolutely.
It's amazing. I mean, I feel very blessed, and I'm just happy that he's working out.
He took two starts to break his maiden, and it was from 7 furlongs, the stretch out, and he was second in his debut, and he took a little bit of money. Then he came back and wins at 3-2, and he won well, wire to wire. Talk about his development and, you know, what's kind of, you know, connecting the dots with him.
Well, if you go on his breeding, I mean, his father is Street Sense won the Derby. And if you go on his grandfather, who was hard-spun, he was bred to go long too, and he took sense in the Derby. So in his breeding, it shows he can go long. His mother never got the opportunity because she refused to start her first race she ever did. So then they retired her and they bred her. And this was the first foal. But if you go back to his pedigree, he shows he wants to go long. So I tried him at 7-8, and I knew he had some tactical speed, and he ran very well. And in his training, when I gallop him in the morning and breeze him, the further he goes, the stronger he was getting. So then I said, well, let's go two turns because he's bred to go two turns. And he just excelled.
You mentioned that dam. The dam Twirl Me, just one start. And what's notable, too, is the presence of King Mambo in here that just, you know, gives a horse a big kind of a raw, bony quality, you know, kind of a toughness to him.
Correct.
Yeah.
So he's just very well bred, and he's got all his breeding shows that he should be able to get the mile and a quarter and go further.
He's going to have to get faster. Talk a little bit about that. I mean, an 84 buyer, and you know, he's going to have to improve and speed up a little bit. You know, talk about your thinking going forward out of this.
Yeah, most definitely. I don't think we've seen the potential of this animal yet. He's a he's still very green. He's just learning how to run, and he has a lot left. I mean, Dylan said he was just sitting easy, and nobody challenged him, so he just didn't really push him to keep going. He did it all on his own.
One thing, I'm curious, especially because you know him from the mornings. He seems to have a tendency to get out, and kind of down the stretch. What do you think that's about?
I don't think it's so much getting out, because in the mornings he doesn't do it. When Dylan switched to his left-hand whip and showed him a stick, that's when he shied away from it. That's just green stuff. We'll just have to work on that.
Wins off by six. And for those that didn't see it, and I suppose some people say, well, what was behind him? We kind of know what was behind him. You know, some solid horses in here. And the way he was finishing really does indicate that, you know, when you go from the mile to a mile and a 16th, the mile and the eighth, and so forth. So you obviously aren't going to be worried about, you know, about the next steps. I saw you thought about, you know, going back to New York, considering that he likes the track. But also, I saw where you hinted that you might think about going to New Orleans. Talk a little bit about, you know, what's going to go into this decision.
I think I made my decision with the owners. We decided to go back to the Withers. It's closer for home. I don't really want to ship that far. I think New York is a good place for him. I think it's going to be good competition up there, and he shows he likes the track, so why take him away from the track that he likes?
No, I can't argue at all. And then Dylan Davis, who has really had a good second half of 2020, and is kind of a story in himself. Dylan now signed on, and he's you'll go forward with Dylan as well.
Yes, most definite. Dylan rides most of my horses. He rode a nice one for me last year. Or year before, I think it was, called Mia Bella Rosa. I won three races with her in New York. And Dylan's always rode hard for me, give me 100%. And you just got to give him the horse, and he's a very capable rider.
I love it. You know, one thing I should mention, too, he's a cowbred, which is pretty funny. Occasionally there's been New York breds that end up in California, and we've talked about those horses. And in fact, you may have been working, I don't know if you were working with Mark Hennig at the time, but there was a Redham horse or two that Doug O'Neill trained for Mr. Redham, that was a New York bred in California that eventually had to go to Mark to take advantage of his New York conditions. This just so happens, boy, you really poached this horse, because I'm sure there's some California connections that would have loved to have had him, out there to take advantage of the Cal program.
Oh yeah, most definitely. I mean, we've had people call from California that want to buy him right now. Because obviously he would be a big horse out there, especially in the California bred stakes. But we said no, so we're looking forward to going on the road and see where we can go with this.
Excellent. Well, what else is in the barn to start the year? Give us a quick barn tour too, to horses to watch out for.
I have another nice 2-year-old here called Scotch Rocks, who's by Darlin. I ran him. He was Capo Kane's work partner every time he breathed, and they both stayed together. He had a little bit more speed than Capo early, and then Capo Kane would catch him at the end of the breezes and go by him. But I ran him twice. He ran second maiden special weight first time, and then he come back and he won his last start maiden special weight. He's nominated for a stake in Maryland. We're going to see if we're going to point him to that, or maybe running back in an allowance race. But
nice.
He's going to be another nice one. I purchased him for $15,000 at the sale, the same time I bought Capo Kane. So,
how about that? Well, I suppose, you know, you do have January and February. We've got, unfortunately, the Paul Pompa dispersal coming up next week at Keeneland. Mm-hmm. You know, there are some bloodstock sales. Are you and the partners going to see if you can't augment your success?
It's a possibility. We haven't really discussed it yet. I'll meet with them this week, and I'll see what they want to do.
I love it. Well, Harry, I was very pleased for you. I figure this has got to mean plenty to get this kind of exposure, win a race like the Jerome, and you know, get a horse that has got lots of upside going forward toward you know, the road to the Wood Memorial, the road to Derby, the road to wherever. It's a nice story already to start the year.
Thank you.
By the way, Harry, any? I couldn't find any social media stuff for you. You got? Can we? We gonna people find you on Twitter and stuff?
I'm on Twitter, but I've seen a lot of posts. People are saying we're getting on the cane train. They're calling it. They've already come up with a cane train. We're getting on the rails for the cane train. And, you know, outside people are putting that on there. So it's kind of amazing. You know, he wins this type of race, and then people just jump on board.
Do you want to give your? Do you have a you know, an address on Twitter for people to follow you?
No, I don't have Twitter. I have Facebook.
All right. So we'll tell people to watch you on Facebook, and I'm excited for you, Harry. This is great.
Thank you.
Not at all. Harry Weiner, everybody, and Capo Kane, your Jerome winner, and it really is bred to just keep stretching. Street Sense out of the Hardspun Mare, and that's even an encouraging story when it comes to the mare, because she started once and got hurt. And just looking back actually at the family, her dam, I brought up King Mambo because her dam, Twirlmee's dam, Mambo Princess, was by King Mambo. So there's, you know, there's some sturdiness in there, and this will be fun. And he does have to get faster. That there's no doubt about that, but it's a nice way to begin the year. And for those that, you know, go to a sale and you don't have stacks of cash, $26,000 at Timonium, right? That'll lift your spirits. We'll take the break here. Top of the hour, an hour already in. We've got Rich Migliori joining us next. I mentioned Todd Fincher. Todd is going to join us. He's going to be a Delta when we reach him in hour three. We'll talk about his emergent three-year-old and the Springboard Mile winner, Senior Buscador. But you want to talk about a productive mare. The Runaway Ghost's mare now has got three stake winners. I think she's fairly young. Unbelievable for Mr. Peacock. The Peacock family. I think it's the son now, Joe Peacock Jr., I think. We'll talk to Todd, and we're going to talk to Don Brumfield. Don's going to visit to pay tribute to David Kasson. I mentioned Brian Hernandez Jr. to talk about Fred Amy, Owen Hardy, and more. Hour two at the races, starting off 2021 here on Sirius XM. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
From BRL Equine, the people that bring you EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Shield, now comes Flexify HA, the most advanced scientifically based joint supplement on the market. To find out more, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880. To be the best, give them only the best. BRL Equine.
Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick.
And
horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Beck.